Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. He's kind of a big deal, just not quite big enough to get his name in the title of the show. This is The Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair. On Toronto Sports Radio, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Here comes the 2-2. Swung on, hit on the ground, wide of third. Great diving stop. Donaldson throw to first and got him. Josh Donaldson with a jump and a fist pump as he comes off the field.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt. I'm in such a good mood today.
You are in a good mood.
I'm in a very good mood today. So good that I'm going to allow Mike Wilner on the show.
What? Hey, what happened?
I don't know. Travis screwed up. Can you kill the song for a minute? You'll see why I'm doing this. Thank you. Okay, you'll see why I'm doing this. I've also just discovered that I have a pair of tickets for today.
Wow.
Game 5 at the Rogers Center at 4 p.m. And I'm going to use them. I'm kidding. I'm going to give those tickets away to I got to come up with a trivia question. I was going to do Mike Wilner trivia.
I was hoping that's what it was going to be.
I was thinking of Mike Wilner trivia. But you heard our intro song that we just played by Tommy Two Tone. It mentions a phone number, a woman's phone number in the title of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's like an earworm. It can't.
It's an earworm. And when I was on the road a lot and I'd get silly drunk every now and then, just for yucks, you would call up that number, whichever area code you were in. You'd dial 213 and then call up that number and just see if anybody answered. It's remarkable how many times it actually worked. I never asked if there was anybody named Jenny there. But here's the thing, and Wilner will appreciate this because he's a big 80s buff. Add up the numbers, add up the numerals in that phone number. The fifth caller through at 416-870-0590.
No, you can't do it.
Come on.
Here we go. Just work with me. The fifth caller through at 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. The fifth caller through who can tell me what that phone number adds up to will get two tickets to see the Jays and Indians today.
Do you know the answer?
Five.
You don't.
Hang on. Let me
add
it up.
Yeah, exactly. You can do your gazintas now.
Anyhow, there you go. So let's just see if Wilner knows the answer. Fifth caller through that can tell me what. You've already heard it. Whatever. The fifth caller through that can tell me.
If anybody wins,
what
this,
the numerals add up to.
I'm
the title of that song.
Travis is furiously.
There's no area code on this number, is
there? No, there's only. No, you idiot. You know the title of the song. If you know the title of the song, you can add up these numerals.
But Travis was just asking if there was an area code. I think that's a very good question.
No.
Because that would make a different answer.
But there's not an area code.
Although the song
it.
Wouldn't be the same if you had to put an area code.
No.
In there.
The title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's confused now.
Fifth caller through that can add up.
Travis, have you added those numbers
Travis
up yet?
Travis, try to do it now. Do we have Wilner on?
Wilner is there. I'm double checking to make sure I have the right number.
Okay, there you go.
You might want to get this right.
Let's see. Wilner, what does that add up? No, don't say it in the air because then
you can't give it away.
I am not magic.
No. Well, how you doing?
Aren't you glad you're here, Michael?
I couldn't be happier, I have to tell you. Yes.
What the hell kept... I mean, it's been ages since you've been on. Why won't you come on with me?
I've been waiting for the invite.
You know, our ratings are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, not having you on hasn't hurt the ratings, I have to admit. But I mean, we'd love to have you on, but you never want to come on. Travis tells me he calls you every second day, And Wilner's always, I got to do this. I can't do that. I can't get up that early. Oh, but you go on with Blundell and company, but you won't go on with me.
I asked you. a couple of weeks ago at the ballpark why I haven't been on your show in a long time, and you said it had nothing to do with you, that Travis makes all the decisions.
Well, he does. I'm Byron Leftwich. He gives me the game plan. I execute it to the best of my limited abilities and hope that I don't get put on waivers at the end of the day. Very simple.
I sent Travis a text yesterday and said, or 2 days ago, and said, Travis, why hast thou forsaken me? And now here I am on your show 2 days later. So there we go.
That was an exact quote.
Poor Travis. So, Mike, I'm going to put you in the spot. Did the Jays win this series?
It's very difficult to imagine the Jays winning this series.
Come on, Mike!
I know people are all excited now, and I mean, it is kind of hilarious given the tone of Blue Jays talk after Game 3 and the tone of Blue Jays talk after Game 4, how much of a 180-degree reversal there was. It was, you know, I'm not sure what day of the week it is. I think it's Wednesday. So Monday, it was despondency and resignation and you know, it's over and time to start thinking about next year. And last night, it's all right, they're going to win the series now. There is definitely, Stephen and I talked on the pregame show yesterday, and there's definitely a road for them to win this series.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost never happened before, and it's going to take perfection over the next three games. And we certainly didn't see perfection from them over the first three games. So, you know, if they hit, they'll win the series. But they have to hit, and they have to hit in each of the next three games.
But you are nothing if not rational, Michael. And it is. And aside from that whole historic thing, you look at the path here, that road, and you know, there's no Clayton Kershaw on that road, right? There's no Madison Bumgarner on that road. There's no guy where you go, well, they won't beat him. Guy doesn't exist.
Trevor Bauer and the Seven Dwarves shut them out in Game 3. So, I mean, that's the thing, right?
I know.
We know that they're not facing any world beaters, but they're facing a guy, if they win tonight, they're facing a guy on Friday who completely befuddled them in Game 2. And, you know, there's still the specter of Andrew Miller and Cody Allen. If there should be another game in which the Blue Jays don't have the lead in the fifth inning.
Yeah, and the Clayton Kershaw, Madison Bumgarner figure in this series is Andrew Miller, right? And that involves being behind in the middle innings and going, oh my God, it's over.
This is Terry Francona has managed in these playoffs such that in every game in which Cleveland has the lead in the fifth inning or later, he's going to those guys in the bullpen and he's doing it immediately. And today, you know, you've got the off day tomorrow, so Miller can throw two innings and Allen can throw two innings and they can come back for game six if there's a game six. That's the danger. The games are very, very short against Cleveland because of that crazy bullpen. And so the Blue Jays need to jump on this Ryan Merritt kid right away and blow him out of the water and never give the Indians the lead. And if that happens, then they're going back to Cleveland. And then they got to do it again. It's certainly going to be very, very difficult for them to come back and win this thing.
We had a conversation with Buck Martinez. Don't want to look too far ahead, but and I asked Aaron Sanchez this after the game anyhow. What do you think Aaron Sanchez's role now is going forward? What do you think Aaron Sanchez's role will be going forward? You know, should the Jays win today and should this series go on, if you get to a Game 7, do you start Aaron Sanchez in Game 7?
No.
Okay.
No, but he's available out of the bullpen.
Okay.
I think that, you know, the Blue Jays' plan going into the playoffs was that Sanchez was going to pitch once a series, game three of the first round, game four of the second round, game four of the World Series if they get there. I think he's available out of the bullpen in game seven if there's a game seven, which, again, there's a not much of a chance that that's going to happen, but...
Well, you know it's going to happen, Mike.
It could happen.
You know it's going to happen.
I doubt it very much, but I think he's available out of the bullpen in Game 7, and he starts Game 4 of the World Series if they win.
What do you think? You know, we talked to Buck about this a little bit as well, but Francisco Liriano is kind of a mystery figure right now for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. You know, you kind of think he's going to be the first man up, and he hasn't been. And again, it's hard to know. This, you know, this series, this, the rest of the season could be this afternoon. That could be it. But do you think we're going to see him again?
I don't know, because it's true. He's the long guy, but he was from the wild card game into the Texas series. He was a dependable kind of, I don't want to say high leverage, I don't think we'd gotten to that point yet, but someone that they were not afraid to use in big spots. And he came in, I think it was 5-1, might have been 5-2 when he came in, got hit in the head by that line drive. And they had to bring Osuna in. But I think since then, you kind of want to pick a spot because you're just not sure what you're going to get from him. Maybe even psychologically, and John Gibbons mentioned that. You don't know if a guy's going to be the same after he gets drilled in the back of the head by a line drive. So I think that Gibby's waiting to find the right spot to use Liriano in. He'd love to do it with a big lead. I wouldn't have minded seeing him in the ninth in game three when they were down 4-2 instead of using Osuna there. But Osuna had only pitched one inning in a week. But I thought that was a spot where they might use him, but he wasn't even up in the bullpen. I didn't think that there was a spot for them to use him yesterday, and I would think that we're probably not going to see him unless the Jays are up by 4 or 5 at some point.
Yeah. No, it's not like there's a lot of experimental spots when you're down, you know, when you lose the first 3 games of a best of 7.
Right. Yeah.
Mike, how do you think Jose Bautista's comments about Ryan Merritt will sit today?
Yeah, I haven't heard him yet.
You haven't heard him yet? Let's play them.
I just teased them last night on my way home, but the break was too long, and I got home, and I didn't hear him.
Let's play them for Mike. It's scintillating stuff. Here we go.
I mean, we'll try to look at videos, look at some scouting reports, see how his ball moves. Not having seen him is something that could go either way. But
here's a payoff.
With our experience in that lineup, I'm pretty sure he's going to be shaking in his boots more than we are. So I like where we're at.
I wonder, you know what, I wonder, the guy's got 11 major league innings and one big league start. I think that more than anything, the crowd could be a huge factor this afternoon. So I hope people get there early, because yesterday it didn't really fill in until the third. There were these massive lineups outside and I don't know, not enough metal detectors or something like that. But I think, honestly, 50,000 people from the second Ryan Merritt throws his first pitch screaming at him could really knock the kid off his game. What worries me a little bit is that we've seen the Blue Jays be mystified by guys they've never seen before, mediocre minor leaguers who come up for their first start, and the Blue Jays can't get a handle on them. And if it takes them a trip and a half through the lineup to figure them out, they're sunk, assuming the Indians are going to have scored a run or two, and they might not. But yeah, that's going to be trouble. So I think that the crowd could play a huge role in, simply with noise, that somebody – I got a very strange tweet yesterday, but simply with noise intimidating Ryan Merritt, and the Blue Jays could take care of the rest.
Well, I mean, we saw with Johnny Cueto last year, who has a track record of this. I mean, I know we've talked about this, Mike. I don't necessarily believe that a loud crowd makes all that much difference in baseball, but in this case, I think it can. I think you're right. I mean, that place is deafening. I'm thinking back to TBS's first telecast here in Toronto. Of the ALDS against Texas, where they opened the show with, and I've got it right in front of me, with Ernie Johnson saying, "Welcome to one of the loudest venues in sports."
Yep.
And the place does have that reputation.
Yeah, it really does. And I talked to Roberto Osuna yesterday for the pregame show as well, and he talked about it, and he said that it can get players off their game, that it, the noise can be intimidating, and he talked about how it was in Cleveland, that they got on them, and he wants the same thing in Toronto. And, you know, we heard comments, I think, in the first round of one of the other series, somebody said, well, it's Toronto loud in here, in one of the other venues, that's becoming the reputation of this city, that it's huge crowds and it's loud crowds, and it gets the other team off their game. And when you've got a guy, again, who's making his second major league start, I think that it can be a really strong force to help the team.
But, you know, Mike, you mentioned that the strange flip side of this, which is when, you know, you hear obscure slop throwing lefty 16th round draft pick 11 major league innings coming in and to face the Toronto Blue Jays, you don't immediately go, oh, they'll eat him up, because
yep.
And do you have a theory
last year,
but do you have a theory why this team with that lineup, with that veteran lineup, with all of the kind of professional hitters in that lineup, has occasionally struggled, maybe more than occasionally, with pitchers they haven't seen before?
No, I don't. I mean, I think that, you know, you would think that it happens with every team all the time, the amount of times we've seen it happen with the Blue Jays the last little bit. And like Jose Bautista said, they'll look at video, but that's all they've got. Dalton Pompey is the only Blue Jay who's ever faced him. I really don't know why it seems as though it's been so difficult with pitchers that they've never seen before. But then again, you know, they saw Pat Ryan for the Minnesota Twins in Minnesota back in May, and they beat him up. That's one that stands out, and then they saw him again, and they did it again. You don't know what the guy's got. Pitchers always have the advantage in every matchup, but it really doesn't make sense that you don't knock around the guys that you should knock around. And, you know, I point to another twin, Tyler Duffy, who they destroyed in his, like, second or third big league start, and it was the only loss of the season for him last year. He pitched really, really well against everybody else. Might have been his first start, and they knocked him out in the second inning, I think. So it can happen. It just does seem not to happen very often with the Jays.
In conversation with Mike Wilner on the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt. Brunt and I both noticed something interesting with Roberto Osuna yesterday when he was warming up, and I don't know if you guys picked it up as well, but he was hardly throwing. He was just very lightly tossing during his warm up when he came onto the mound, and he didn't throw a pitch with anything even remotely resembling velocity until his final warm up pitch.
And then was vintage Shosuna when
and
he
then
was
he
pitched.
Was great once it started, mind you. You know, there was a lot of talk about using, I shouldn't say a lot of talk, that's not fair, but I mean, people like Keith Law and Jonah Carey on Twitter made pretty clear that they didn't think much of John Gibbons' decision to go with Roberto Osuna yesterday, which, you know, to me, it was a no-brainer. I mean, I guess Joe Biagini would have been your other choice, but did it surprise you at all?
Nope. No, that's the way John Gibbons managed in the regular season sometimes. A 4-run lead, 3-run lead, no difference. You need a win, you need a win. And it was a 2-3-4 hitters in the Indians lineup. So absolutely, I was assuming that he was going to go to Roberto Osuna. Aaron Loop was the other guy who was warming up. And you know, the thing is, if you bring in somebody else and he puts one guy on, Osuna's coming in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well
That's right.
him. And he only threw 10 pitches, and he'll be fine for today. But that warm-up thing I've seen before, and I think it was in Cleveland, and it was a little confusing too. And then he came on and he was just terrific. So I don't know, maybe this is his thing now. But whatever it is, it's working.
Mr. Wilner, we're going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this. We'll have you back again. Spring training, Travis, when's it start?
I figured December would be the next time you'd have me on, but that's all right.
No,
that's
I'm just, out. Wilner, come on. I love you, man. I'm just kidding. It's just the way things work out. I mean, you lead a complicated life. By the way, what was the answer to our trivia question?
38, wasn't it?
You got it.
A better trivia question would be, what's the song really about? But I can't give you that answer on the air.
Hang on. Is there a 867-5309? Okay, well, Like, are we talking something sexual here?
Yes.
Oh. Well, now you got me thinking. Brent, take over the show. I want to figure this out.
You're sitting there having fun with fingers here, aren't you?
6, 7, 5, 3. Huh. Anyhow, thank you, Mr. Wilner.
All right. See you at the ballpark, boys.
See you there, Michael.
Absolutely. Mike Wilner, our third man in the booth and host of the Blue Jays Talk and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back after a long absence.
Well, it just works out that way. It's not like we don't mind. We don't do. You know me. Far be it from me to hold a grudge against anybody.
That's true. That's absolutely true. You are not a holder of grudges.
I'm not. And I'm a creator of grudges, but I'm not a holder of grudges. And there was no grudge. It was just that. Now look at Travis's gesturing. You know that Wilner's questioning him on this. Part of the issue is Mike's life is really complicated between like 8:30 and 10:30. And I mean that, you know, because he's got kids.
He's got life, yes.
He's got a life.
Yes.
Yeah, I know a lot of people out there think Mike gets up out of bed and goes to the ballpark and
starts answering callers and
helps Jerry prepare for the game and gets everything set up. I know people think that that's Mike's life, but no.
Brings Jerry coffee.
Mike has got very, it's a complicated life. There's several balls in the air. So that's all. I mean, there was nothing, you know, there was nothing personal. Travis, do I have a blacklist of people I do not want?
No, you're not the person around here who has a blacklist.
No. Travis, do I have one? Oh, actually, yeah. Well, okay. We've got a couple.
Well, that's okay.
It's odd how many of them I used to work with, too. Anyhow. Congratulations, Loretto Capobianco from Kleinburg, Ontario. You had the correct answer for our trivia question. 867-5309 adds up to 38. I still don't know why. I don't understand the message behind it. You have got two tickets for today's game at the Rogers Center between the Cleveland Indians and the Toronto Blue Jays.
Get there early. Avoid the lineup.
Yeah. You know, Mike made a point, and it was a valid one. There was a lot of people outside of the ballpark.
4 p.m. start. You know, that's the issue, is that people can't get there early because they have lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we're supposed to a night game where you can get there, an 8 o'clock game, people are quite willing. Doors open at 6, right?
Right.
So I think a lot of people skipped out of work or whatever they were doing, got there a half hour before the game, and it was a mess outside. And it's nobody's fault. It's Major League Baseball rules, the security stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever you think of it, it's just the current reality. So it's not like people are trying to keep you out of the building, but just be forewarned that there were thousands of people out there yesterday who missed the first inning, for sure.
And if it makes you feel any better, we have to go through the same security clearance and we go into the media gate.
Yeah.
Shorter line. And it's working because there have been no reported incidents of reporters blowing up press boxes. Mm-hmm. So clearly, the security is working. Again, first pitch is at 4 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 590. The Fan Blue Jay Central postseason with Campbell's on and Tabler is at 3 p.m. The radio pregame is at 3 p.m. as well. And then after the game, you can call in to Mike Wilner for the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Let's take a break. We're going to be joined on the other side by Jordan Bastian, who covers the Indians for MLB.com. You will, of course, many of you will remember Jordan. He covered the Blue Jays for MLB for a long time. He's a terrific reporter and a really decent dude. And we'll talk to Jordan Bastian about Ryan Merritt, international man of mystery. Martin Tilk says that on Wikipedia, the Jenny referred to in the song is a hooker. Oh, I did not know that. It's a Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. Have we been too negative this morning?
No, not at all.
Apparently people are saying we're negative.
Who? What people? Well, that's not true at all. I was saying yesterday when they were down 3-0 that they could win the series. Okay, apparently. The voice of optimism.
People are under the impression that, and I was the one predicting Ryan Goins is going to homer every at bat.
Yeah, you did do that. That was great. He caught the ball, though. He's good at catching the ball.
Where did this come from? Some guy sent this out on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Similarities between the 04 Red Sox and the 2016 Blue Jays. Of course, the 04 Red Sox came back from 3-0 deficit. Both entered the playoffs in a wild card spot.
Uh-huh. Check.
Both swept their opponents in the ALDS.
Check.
Both lost the ALCS the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
Both had a World Series drought. Both witnessed a pitcher bleeding. Both have a player with the first name Kevin and the last name ending in Iller. So Kevin Millar, Kevin Pillar.
Okay.
A lot of you really have too much time in your hands. But I kind of like that. That's from Mike Mandarello. And it was also sent out to McAuliffe and Sixero, so I presume it'll be in their show as well. Anyhow, do we have Jordan Bastion, Travis? Oh, you're calling him right now? No, you're not. You're talking to Barker.
Barker's sitting there eating a banana. Getting ready, doing his show prep. Getting his potassium levels up.
Barker's eating a banana as he talks. So I would just, you know, Travis, call Jordan and try to multitask. First pitch today, by the way, is at 4 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet Ontario. I don't think we've been overly negative.
I don't think so at all. It's a fun time.
Well, I think it's a fun time. I mean, has there been too much Batista bashing? Perhaps. I might. I don't know. People got me thinking now. 4 o'clock is the first pitch. As I said, in Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Sportsnet Ontario. There is also hockey tonight. There's always hockey. Maple Leafs at the Jets. Significant because it will be Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine. Their first meeting. And Hockey Central's pregame will be at 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Puck drop will be just after 8 on Sportsnet Ontario. And our Leafs Nation postgame with Stelic and Hlischko will be at 11 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So that'll be fun.
What, the Leafs?
Leafs and the Jetties.
Oh, yeah.
Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine.
I'm excited, and you're going to Winnipeg. You're all
going
excited.
To Winnipeg. I'm all set. Go to Miss Brown's for breakfast. I'm looking forward to it.
You are more excited about a trip to Winnipeg than most people I know would be.
Well, it's because I like Winnipeg.
Yes.
It's home. I know my way around. And I like any city where I can find a drink at 4 in the morning.
Wasn't it Dieter Bronk who you also love? Because we had him on the show.
We had him on the show.
Isn't he the one that said, once you've seen the zoo, that's about it?
He is the one who said, once you've seen the zoo, that's about it. And it's a damn fine zoo, I might add. The Assiniboine Park Zoo.
Yeah, it's amazing they still worship him there, given that he said that.
They don't really worship him, I don't think, all
that much.
Isn't
there a statue of Ralph Dieter Brock somewhere in Winnipeg?
He's a great quarterback. Throw ball 75 yards on one knee.
I know. We had this guy. Remember we had him on for that kind of pointless interview?
It was a pointless interview.
Totally pointless.
We were talking about the Los Angeles Rams. Yeah. Who better to have a guy who's yes. taken the Rams to the Super Bowl?
Who was taken by the Rams to the Super Bowl.
Was taken by the Rams to the Super Bowl.
Allowed him to ride the team bus to the Super Bowl.
Still holds several Rams records. Anyhow, let's bring in Jordan Bastion, who covers the Cleveland Indians for MLB.com. Hello, Jordan.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing this morning?
Doing well. Did you enjoy our little conversation about Dieter Brock, L.A. Rams quarterback?
Hearing you go on and on about how awesome Winnipeg is, it just was bringing back all sorts of memories from when I was sitting near you in the press box.
That's true. That's true. There are some other memories that we could talk about.
Sure.
No, let's not. Tell me about Kyle Merritt.
Yeah, Ryan Merritt.
I did that. I did that intentionally. Come on, give me the benefit of the doubt. Ryan Merritt.
You know what's funny is someone else asked me about Ryan Merritt last night, and I said I know as much as John Gibbons. And if you remember John Gibbons' answer last night, he said
left-handed.
He's left-handed. And I think that's, in a way, kind of the story of Ryan Merritt right now, is that nobody really knows much about this guy. You know, he's not one of their highly touted prospects. He's not a kid that, you know, I really know a ton about, because I didn't really expect him to even really make the major league roster this year. But because of all the injuries and issues, and I think when he came to the big league team just sort of as bullpen insurance earlier in the year, I think it was in the wake of that 19-inning game in Toronto when the pitching staff was just ravaged. They had to make a bunch of moves. You know, he's a really soft-spoken kid from Texas, and the thing they love about him is he just throws strikes. He's like the left-handed Josh Tomlin, if you want a comparison in terms of stuff. And so I think that's why on this stage, or even when they were trying for home field at the end of the regular season and they needed somebody to make a start just because of all the injuries that they've had, you know, they handed the ball to him. And one of the reasons is exactly that. Terry Francona really loves that he has a kid that, even though he doesn't have a ton of experience, he knows he can put out there on the mound and he knows he's going to throw strikes and basically not beat himself. And I think on this stage, that's what you want. You want to have that trust that he's going to attack. And, you know, if it doesn't go well, you know, Terry Francona held some of his arms back in that game yesterday. So you have Cody Allen and Andrew Miller fresh today. You know, so hopefully from the Indians' perspective, Ryan Merritt can give a little length. The offense can get that lead, because really the story of the series has been the pitching. On both sides, the pitching has been tremendous. Mm-hmm. It's kind of been overlooked that the Indians haven't hit, just like the Blue Jays hadn't hit really up until yesterday. So the difference has been Indians have been able to get that lead in the middle of the game and then turn the game over to their bullpen. So that's kind of going to be the formula they're looking for once again tonight.
Clevenger's name was penciled in for that start originally, wasn't it, Jordan?
It was, and that was, he was their fourth starter at the end of the year, but they really like him, and he's another rookie out of the bullpen. And unlike Merritt, he's a guy that's a little more susceptible to walks. And unlike Merritt, he's a guy that had no longer been stretched out. Once they put him in the bullpen, they kind of ceased the throwing program where he would be stretched out to start. And he was penciled in as that starter in this series before the roster was set. And then once Trevor Bauer injured his finger and it sort of caused that pitching staff scramble, they actually they originally planned to have another reliever, Joe Colon, on their roster, and they decided against that, added Ryan Merritt, and because he could give them more innings and because he, as I said, just kind of can pound the strike zone a little more consistently, you know, that's why they ended up going with him over Clevenger and leaving Clevenger in the bullpen.
Yeah, you know, the Bauer thing, it does, you know, obviously unexpected, presents all kinds of complications right. For Francona, and I get complications for their medical staff. What do they think in terms of, you know, this series? I would seem unlikely that you would see him again, but I guess it's possible if he heals up. But you know, even beyond that, if the Indians advance, what can they kind of assume in terms of that injury now?
It's going to be a wait and see thing. I think one thing that Francona said was a positive was it wasn't like the whole wound ripped open; it was one little spot, and like they wanted him to be able to get through that inning quick. So he could get back to the dugout, almost like a boxer. They wanted to get him to his cut man, you know, in the dugout between innings. They weren't able to do that, obviously. But I think the hope here is, you know, if it came down to it and it went seven games of the series and there was an extra inning game and it was just absolutely emergency, I think they feel by the length of this series they could maybe use him out of the bullpen in an emergency situation. I highly doubt you're going to see Trevor Bauer pitch again in this series. If they make the World Series, then if you line him up for game three or you want to buy yourself even more time in game four, you know, you're giving him at least 10 days to now heal as opposed to 48 hours, which was the scenario before. And we all saw on national television how just absolutely ugly that wound was. I think it could use 10 days or more to heal because that was just a really problematic situation. And, you know, we saw what happened in that game, for lack of a better term, bleed into the next game because that's what forced Corey Kluber to start on short rest, because they wanted to give Kluber not only the chance to finish the series, which didn't happen, but they trusted that he would be able to pitch deep into the game and kind of save their bullpen.
What are the other, you know, again, I'm not one get too far ahead here, and I'm not conceding the Indians' berth in the World Series, but you know, if Bauer, you know, if they can't, they don't feel secure in him being healed up. The options are really limited here, right? You got Kluber potentially making a Game 7 start on short rest. You know, you've got a diminished rotation. It's going to be pretty tricky here for Francona, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's Josh Tomlin would be pitching Game 6, and then Kluber would be coming back on short rest for Game 7. I mean, that's what it would be. There's no debating that. But if there's any kind of setback for any of those guys, luckily none of the other guys are into building drones, so they're not going to have any late-night drone accidents for the rest of the series. But they have no one else right now. I mean, it's an interesting scenario. When they headed into the playoffs, it was like, here's their three starters. What are they going to do when they get to the ALCS? Well, now that's why you see Ryan Merritt, you know, this kid with one career start under his belt, getting a start in the biggest game of his life and one of the biggest games in the franchise's history. You see it him. You know, Carlos Carrasco's injured. Danny Salazar is throwing, but he has a forearm strain and he's not 100% healthy. And even if he were back, he couldn't start. And other guys who were starters at one point this year, Cody Anderson and Mike Clevenger, they're in the bullpen now, and they like them in the bullpen. You know, so if you have a setback to any of the starters, then it becomes an even more problematic situation, and that's why you're not seeing any type of roster move with Bauer, because if they were to try and replace him for this series to get an extra arm, they lose him for the World Series potentially. And if you lose him for the World Series, then you're down to Kluber and Tomlin and Andrew Miller and everybody else.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a really dicey situation right now, and kind of walking on eggshells.
You know, Jordan, Terry Francona is getting a lot of credit for the way he's managed his bullpen in this series, starting with the way he's used Andrew Miller. But in Game 3, the way he kind of, you know, he was able to nurse his team through the whole Trevor Bauer situation. Give it a chance to cover him for a while now. You know, obviously his record speaks for itself. I think he's tied with Sparky Anderson for the seventh most wins all time in the postseason. I believe his postseason winning percentage is at the top or very near the top. What is it about Terry Francona that, you know, allows him to have this knack for managing crisis? You know, and John Farrell made this point one time about how, and when I say crisis, I'm not talking about a nuclear crisis or anything like that, but I'm talking about the stuff that happens in the day-to-day life of a team. And he said Terry's the absolute best at just handling that stuff that comes up all of a sudden. What is it about him that allows him to do that?
I think part of it is just his personality. He's so loose and easygoing, and I don't think the players ever see him panicking. I think that's huge. I think the other part of it, especially here in Cleveland, you know, is he's been here for 4 years now, and a lot of the players in that locker room and in that dugout have been with him for 4 years now. So they have learned now that if you're a platoon player or if you're a pitcher who's only facing right-handed hitters, or, you know, if you don't have a role in the bullpen, that you're on call for any inning, you know, they've been with him long enough now to not raise an eyebrow at it or wonder what he's doing, but to trust that it's going to work. You know, like Lonnie Chisenhall has basically been a versus right-handed bat for his entire time under Terry Francona. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure earlier in his career, he would have loved to have been a full-time player. But after 4 years of this, and to see how his own personal statistics have blossomed under this approach, I mean, his slash lines look a lot better. And so there's a lot that trust of, all right, yeah, he actually is maximizing my production. He is putting me in the best situation to succeed. And now when I go to arbitration, hey, I'm making more money.
Right.
You know, so it all kind of ties together. And I think because he's been here for so long, he's never – I mean, another example is he's never called Cody Allen the closer. We always call Cody Allen the closer because he pitches the ninth the most and gets the most saves out of anyone in that group. I've never heard Terry Francona use the word closer in 4 years.
Interesting.
It's just because he doesn't want to pigeonhole anyone into roles, because he wants everyone to be open-minded. And I think after 4 years, he's had the buy-in from his players. You know, a guy like Brandon Guyer, he's a left-handed hitting weapon. He wants to play every day. He wants to face right-handed pitching. But he knows, I have 1,000 OPS against left-handed pitching, and that's how Terry Francona is using me, and it's benefiting the team. And he's gotten this total buy-in from his players from that success over the years. And that, I think, is what allows him in game to make these decisions and have those players willing to sort of embrace what looks unconventional to everybody else.
Jordan, assuming that the Indians, that the Cleveland winds up with a lead, they're ahead in the game. How early could we see Andrew Miller today, and how long could he go?
Oh man, I mean, he went. It was the first game of the playoffs. He was in the fifth inning, and then he pitched 40 pitches to really try and extend it and get to that the other guys in the bullpen. You know, I would not put it past Terry Francona to even start going to his bullpen in the fourth. You know, if they get a lead with Ryan Merritt and Terry Francona is viewing this like there is no tomorrow, which is the way he's tried to approach every single one of these playoff games, I could see him going to the bullpen early. If they get a lead, you have this rookie, you know, out there. He's going to have, you know, that stadium packed and loud and trying to rattle him. If they get a lead, I could see them trying to go to the bullpen early, get Andrew Miller there by the fifth, sixth, seventh, try and bridge that gap to the guys at the end. So I would not be surprised if that's the approach.
Jordan, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much. Good to talk to you again.
All right. No problem, Jeff. Anytime.
Jordan Bastian covers the Indians for MLB.com, formerly with MLB.com, covering the Toronto Blue Jays. Did a great job. Yeah, that's an interesting insight into Terry Francona. I didn't know that.
Well, and you saw him flip-flop those guys in game two, right? Yeah. Like that he, you know, we've kind of viewed it going in, well, it's Miller's the kind of super setup guy and Allen's the closer. But then he flip-flopped it and Allen came in first, went through the meat of the order, and Miller came in and closed and finished the game. So it's interesting. You know, again, that's the new age.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys, you know, who look at numbers would say that's the way you should do it.
Well, and it's fascinating because you would not necessarily view Terry Francona as a renaissance man among managers. I mean, he's an old school guy.
In a lot of ways he is.
You know, managed the Phillies. I think the fact that he managed the Red Sox under Theo Epstein, who, you know, Billy Beane gets a lot of credit for, and rightly so, because of the whole Moneyball thing. But it was really the Boston Red Sox, I think, kind of institutionalized it in terms of how big market teams can use statistics to leverage a situation. And I think they, in some ways, refined. And part of the reason is they won a World Series.
Yeah.
You know, Billy Beane, at the end of the day, really hasn't won jack.
But you're right. The Red Sox, big money team, handed the keys to an analytics guy.
Terry Francona was able to make it work with him. Now he's at Cleveland. It's interesting. You talked about, you used the word organizational culture. And that is a word we're going to hear around the Blue Jays as this new management group. You know, I think we can say this is the first offseason they've had intact.
Yes.
First full offseason where they've got their own collected evidence about what they have. You know, their own sets of eyes. They've seen this team now for a full season at least. You're going to hear a lot about organizational culture. And I know, there's no surprise, that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins really like what Cleveland has going on. And Terry Francona is a big part of that. It kind of raises an interesting question about what John Gibbons' role would be in helping define the organizational culture.
Well, we know he's coming back. And again, I'm not sure how much pickup there's been on this. But
yeah, we should actually mention
that. Yeah, Mark Shapiro in that sit-down I did with him last week said definitively that John Gibbons is managing the team next year. Now, he's under contract next year. And for one more year, you know, in theory, you would extend him. You'd have to extend him.
But we'd be lying if we didn't say right now that we've at times thought that there was a chance John Gibbons wouldn't be back next year.
Well, I think there are a bunch of, not making the playoffs, not winning a wild card game. I'm not sure. I know they like John Gibbons, but you know what we're talking about with the culture, Jeff, which they see as kind of a 2 or 3 or 4 year thing that you build this culture. John Gibbons is going to have to become part of that culture. The culture is not going to be John Gibbons.
Right.
So that's, you know, and I think so far so good. You know, I think so far they've worked very well together. He works well with Ross Atkins. They like the way he's handled this team. They like the way he's handled the clubhouse. They like the way he manages the team during games. So it's fine. But, there's going to be the stamp. A stamp is going to be put on this team, not by John Gibbons, but by the guys now in charge.
Mm-hmm. And I would think that there will be. I mean, I know these guys are big on stability, and I think that probably plays into John Gibbons' hands because, well, you know, John Gibbons, I know we've only got a minute left, or it's probably too late to start talking about this, but John Gibbons is a smart guy, and John Gibbons, I wouldn't necessarily call him headstrong. I think John Gibbons is the type of guy who can process information from different sources. And, you know, he's still got strong opinions, but I think he's prepared to move a little bit on those opinions.
Yes, I think you're right.
And, but it is interesting because the manager has a role in organizational culture because he's kind of the hands-on guy. He's the guy. The players don't see Mark Shapiro when they come into the clubhouse in the middle of a three-game losing streak or a four-game losing streak. It's John Gibbons that they see. So, interesting point. We'll continue that discussion tomorrow.
When we're talking about...
getting ready for game six.
Exactly.
I'm predicting a win.
We're optimistic here, Jeff.
We're optimistic. I'm predicting a win. I'm predicting Marco Estrada, 8 innings.
Well, that's a pretty, you know, I'm predicting a quality start for Marco Estrada. That's a relatively easy prediction this year.
Oh, by the way, I got to thank you, Travis, for reminding me very, very quickly because we've got to give our cue to call. Tell us the win your way to the World Series code word and be the ninth caller through now to qualify for an all-inclusive trip for two to game four of the World Series, courtesy of Miller Lite. Call 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Prize includes return airfare from Toronto, two-night accommodations, $500 U.S. spending money, and a pair of tickets to game four of the World Series. Grand prize winner will be announced during Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on Friday. You can get all the details and full contest rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Come on, Kevin Barker, let's bring you in. Time for Baseball Central.